Chapter 8. I came up out of the tunnel into the lilac bushes with my tools and crossed the lawn to the shed. It was early evening, and the sun had almost set over the western horizon. The sky was streaked with beautiful swaths of orange and pink, but I couldn't fully appreciate it because a sour sort of feeling had settled in my stomach since I'd lost track of the hooded figure in the tunnels. Where did they go? Who or what were they? I suspected whatever it was had been following me, maybe since the first time Amriel and I set foot into the southern section of the tunnels, possibly longer. The idea of not knowing what was living down there was unsettling, but if I'd pursued the figure any further, I would have run the risk of getting lost. As it was, it had taken me 20 minutes to backtrack to an area that was familiar before I headed back to the surface. I put my tools away in the shed and double-checked the connections to and from the solar panel, converter, and battery in the entrance chamber of the tunnels. Then I went to the side yard to grab the trash cans, and I rolled them down to the curb for trash pickup in the morning. I continued to think about the figure and how they'd gotten away from me. I guess tonight we'd see how well the new system worked. I was lost in thought as I took the trash to the curb, so it wasn't until I looked up to head back into the house that I saw the swish of lace curtains in Mrs. Whitmire's front window. She'd been spying on me again. I let out a snort of frustrated breath through my nose, and I kept walking as I tried to ignore the bored old woman's obsession with me and the two exotic women living with me. But then, I noticed the sound of running water and looked to my left to see Brock Stanton watering his lawn with a spray attachment on his garden hose. I knew for a fact Stanton owned a nice sprinkler system on a timer, not to mention that it was Ohio in the late summer, so we'd gotten plenty of rain recently. Hell, there was a thunderstorm about every 3 or 4 days, so Brock wasn't even being subtle at this point. The bald man looked boldly over at me, put on a phony smile, and waved, so I waved back out of a Midwestern obligation to be outwardly polite, but inside I was seething. Brock was also clearly finding excuses to watch my place, and when I looked back over my shoulder, he was still watching me, but he wasn't smiling anymore. Who the fuck had time to be so concerned about how other people were living? We kept to ourselves. The yard was the nicest it had been, maybe ever. Certainly worlds better than when my grandpa owned the place, so what the fuck did they care if I chose to live with two women? Admittedly, their appearances were out of the ordinary, but we weren't hurting anyone. The way Stanton acted, you'd think we were running a meth lab out of the trailer or something. The idea of moving further out of the country had occurred to me, but that would mean leaving the entrance to the gloom, which I wasn't going to do anytime soon. There had to be another option. As I stepped back into the house, I found the ladies watching a fantasy show that they'd initially laughed at, but had since gotten really into. The elf and Zinkari looked up when I came in, and I saw the sudden concern on Ibsith's face.
"Is everything all right, my love?"
she asked. "Yeah." I lied since I didn't want to bother her with my frustrations. "I'm going to take a shower. I'm all covered in grime from working in the tunnels. But what would you girls think about going out tomorrow night?"
"Hell yes!"
Amriel grinned.
"What did you have in mind?"
"I was thinking about going into the city," I replied with a shrug as I bent to unlace my boots. "Maybe find some place where we can blow off some steam and have fun."
"That sounds wonderful."
Ibsith smiled at me. Looking at the two insanely hot women sitting on my couch, smiling up at me, somehow made all my cares and concerns melt away, and I grinned back. That night passed without any incidents. Nothing set off the motion sensors in the tunnels, so whatever was down there had the sense not to come out into the main passageways. But we would see how things went over the next few days. It might have just been scared off for now after I'd chased it. The next morning, I went to an outdoor sporting goods store I'd found online and bought them out of bear traps. They only had a half dozen on hand, but I figured I could wait to get more online. These would be enough to place around the southern tunnels as a further deterrent to whatever was down there, because the last thing I wanted was to wake up to a goblin or some shit in my backyard. I brought the bear traps back home, and Amriela helped me set up the traps. Since there were only 6, we had to think very carefully about where we would put them, and in the end, we chose to place them around the corners that would lead up to the entrance tunnels from the Lost Dwarves corridors.
"Where did you see it?"
the red-skinned woman asked as we strained against the large metal bear trap to set it.
"Over there."
I grunted and pushed the mechanism into place. It came around the corner, but I didn't really get a good look at it. It was maybe 4 feet tall at most.
"It could have been a goblin."
Amriela agreed as she stood, brushed the dust off of her knees, and looked down at the trap.
But I doubt it. I've never seen one higher than the Twilight Region, and I've definitely never seen one on its own. They live in hordes for a reason.
What reason is that? I asked as I carried the last bear trap further down the tunnel.
They're clever,
the horned woman said as she walked beside me.
But woefully weak and cowardly by themselves. At least the smaller ones are. Like demons, there is more than one kind of goblin.
Well, I replied as I set the bear trap down and Amreel and I worked the mechanism into place. If there are goblins down here, we'll know soon enough. After all the traps were set, the Zinkari woman and I went back up to the surface. And while Amreela went back into the house to clean up, I went over to check the solar panel and make sure everything was still working as expected. I'd never set up a solar panel or a security system before, so I just wanted to double and triple check my work to be sure the system worked when I really needed it to. As I checked some of the connections at the base of the panel, I heard the sound of laughing and giggling coming from the other side of the back fence. I looked over the back of the fence, and I could see the Miller kids from the next door playing in the lots behind me. Technically, part of this land belonged to me, since the long, narrow lot that my grandpa had left me extended for a half acre. I opened the back fence and looked out as the kids continued a lively game of tag, but I wasn't paying any attention to the Miller kids. I was thinking about the future. I'd thought about building onto the trailer, or just having the trailer moved and starting a whole new build project, but the narrow lots didn't leave a lot of room for building out. If I built back into the yard, though, I could extend the fence back, too. Ibsith was already thinking about having kids, and assuming we wouldn't have to raise them in the gloom if they favored my elven wife, we'd need more space in a proper house. My reverie was broken by the sound of a small voice, and I took my eyes off the middle distance to look down at Jenny Miller standing 3 feet away.
What are you looking at, Mr. Hill?
The little girl asked. She wore a blue romper today, and the little baby hairs on her forehead were matted with perspiration from running around in the sun. Nothing, I said with a shake of my head. Just thinking. What are you guys up to?
Playing tag.
Jenny grinned.
Hiding from Mrs. Bitchmire.
One of her brothers chimed in. I had to stifle a laugh. Jenny had referred to the old lady next door as Mrs. Witchmire before, but Bitchmire was a new one, and I knew that was how I would secretly refer to the nosy neighbor from now on. Why do you have to hide? I asked in as innocent of a tone as I could muster.
She's over at our house,
the oldest boy said in a sullen voice,
bitching to Mom about you and your girlfriends.
Really? I replied and raised my eyebrows with surprise. Does she do that often? I'd never paid much attention to the comings and goings of the old woman, but the idea she was going out of her way to complain about me to the other neighbors was annoying, to say the least.
Yeah,
the younger brother interjected.
Bitchmire really doesn't like you.
Stop swearing, Hank!
Jenny scolded her brother. Hank was a skinny blonde boy who wore a t-shirt with a cartoon dog on it. He was running in circles at a mile a minute and was so full of boyish energy that standing still was probably painful for the little guy.
But that's what Caleb calls her.
Hank protested as he stopped long enough to look at Jenny for a second.
Well, Caleb is 10, so if he wants to get in trouble for swearing, that's on him.
Jenny retorted with her little hands on her hips, and then she turned back to me.
Mom hates Mrs. Witchmire. I don't know why she lets her come over. I think that's why she and Daddy are talking about moving.
Your parents are thinking about moving? I asked as a new thought dawned on me.
Yeah,
the oldest brother Caleb replied.
Hopefully closer to Cleveland. There's nothing to do in this town.
Caleb kicked at a rock and shoved his hands in his pockets. The oldest boy was the only one of the kids with brown hair, and he was wearing basketball shorts and a plain t-shirt. He probably felt like he was too mature to have cartoon animals on his shirt. I kind of felt for him, too. I'd also grown up in a small town, and I remembered thinking the same thing. Living in a small town is all the more appealing as an adult who's aware of the cost of living and has the freedom to drive out of town when the mood strikes him. How would you feel about moving? I asked Jenny.
I would miss Casey,
the little girl said with a sigh.
She's been my best friend since kindergarten. But it could be okay, like an adventure.
I really liked Jenny. She was a fellow optimist, and those could be rare nowadays. Well, you let me know if your parents decide to move soon, I said as I started to turn. For now, you kids have fun. I still have chores to do. It was nice meeting you boys. The two boys, who had gone back to chasing each other, waved at me.
Bye, Mr. Hill!
Jenny shouted, and then she went to join her brothers. As I walked back through the back gate, I thought about the possibility of the Millers moving. A new neighbor could come with any number of complications, and I already had my fill of assholes in the neighborhood. But if I bought the Millers' place, I could move the ladies into a proper house. Then I could tear down the trailer and build on as I saw fit, after I got the permits needed to keep that fuck Brock off my back. I put researching current property values and making a call to Meyer on my to-do list. I knew Meyer would probably caution me not to spend so much right now, since I'd already spent a fair amount fixing up the trailer and securing the tunnels, but if the opportunity presented itself, I'd make an offer on the Miller's house. Even if that meant sharing a property line with Brock Stanton. As I headed back into the house, I idly wondered how much loot I would have to sell to buy Brock out. The idea of just handing the smug, bald man a sack of gold coins to fuck off was oddly satisfying. After all, for men like him, everything had a price. I imagined the look on Brock's stupid face as I straight up handed him a chest full of gems and gold and told him to move out, and with the gloom practically at my fingertips, I could replenish the gold before the movers even arrived. It was a silly daydream, but I found it entertaining. That evening, the ladies got ready for our night out in the city. Ibsith put her long, silky white hair up in a loose bun and wore a short white skirt with large pink flowers printed on it. Then, the elven woman paired the skirt with a cropped peasant-style top that showed just a hint of her smooth, firm stomach when she moved the right way. Amrila, as always, was more daring in a pair of black vinyl shorts, knee-high boots, and an artfully torn red t-shirt. The horned woman had also chosen to put her hair up, probably because it was a hot, humid summer night. We all got into the truck and headed northeast into Cleveland, and I drove toward the all-ages arcade I'd found with a quick internet search. The reason I'd chosen the place was because it not only had a bar in the back, but it also had skee-ball, which I hadn't played in a few years. Since it was all ages, I knew Ibsith and Amrila wouldn't need ID to get in, but I would be able to have a beer and enjoy time with the girls. When we stepped through the large glass doors, I watched as Ibsith's eyes went wide and a huge smile crossed her face. There was music blaring, intermixed with the chiming sounds of countless video games, shouts and laughter as people won or lost games. It was an assault on the senses, and my wife was here for it. Amrila looked around like she was not quite sold yet on the loud, lively arcade, but I knew once she played a few games, the horned woman's competitive spirit would come out, and she'd have the time of her life.
What is this place?
Ibsith squealed with excitement and clapped her hands. These are all games, I said as I directed the women over to a counter where we got key cards we loaded money onto to play to our heart's content. It was way better than the old way of carrying around pockets full of quarters or tokens. We use these cards, I continued as I handed one to each of the ladies, to pay for the games. Over here, I'll show you. I took the women over to an air hockey table that wasn't in use and slid my card into the provided slots, and the game came to life with flashing lights, a cheesy theme tune, and the unmistakable sound of the air compressor kicking on inside of the game.
Are there any rules?
The horned woman asked as she eyed the humming table. Nothing complicated, I shrugged. Amrila, you stand over there, and Ibsith, you come over here. I stood behind the blue-skinned woman, handed her the other white paddle, and put my hand over her hand as I set the puck onto the pillow of air that came up through the holes in the table. Then I moved Ibsith's hand in mine and hit the puck down the table, where it went unimpeded into the goal on the other side. The score readout above the table went from double zeros to 1-0.
Ooh, what fun!
My wife laughed and cheered, but the Zinkari woman on the other side of the table instantly caught on to what the changing numbers meant, and her eyes darkened slightly. The horned woman picked up the puck from her side of the table, set it down, and then hit it with her paddle so hard it flew off the hockey table, and I had to chase it down. I handed the puck back to Amrila, who snatched it out of my hand.
Thank you,
she said in a clipped tone that made me chuckle, and then she set the puck down and tried again. Meanwhile, Ibsith was still standing on the other side of the table, and she smiled as she toyed with the paddle in her hand. You each use your paddles to try to move the puck, I said as I pointed to the flat disc. Into the hole on the other side of the table. That's how you score a point, and you also use your paddle to protect the hole on your side, so the other person doesn't score. It's pretty easy.
But she already has 1 point,
Amrila complained.
Oh,
Ibsith said sweetly.
I'll let you score 1 point, so we're even. Or we can say the first game doesn't count, since we're both just learning how to play. Doesn't count?
Amrila narrowed her eyes.
Of course it'll count. But it does only seem fair to even up the score before we really start.
I had to keep myself from bursting out laughing as I listened to the girls work it out on their own. Then Amrila sent the puck sailing down the table, and the game really got started. As I predicted, Amrila's competitive side came out right away. The red-skinned woman's playing style was very aggressive, and she clearly preferred to be on the offensive. But to her credit, Ibsith held her own, and she watched the puck intently as it floated on the air cushion, down the table, before she knocked it back toward the Zincari woman's goal. The first game went to Amrila.
Victory!
She raised her arms and whooped in celebration as soon as the score went to 10-15, and the table chimed and flashed to show the game was over. The next game went to Ibsith, as her concentration on the puck and defensive style finally won out, but the score was a lot closer this time. As the game table rewarded my wife with music and a light show, Ibsith jumped up and down and cheered, while Amrila merely let out an exasperated grunt. Then I laughed as I saw two teenage boys to one side also watching as my wife jumped in celebration, and their eyes were glued to her ample breasts bouncing in her small, white peasant top. One of the boys noticed me catching him staring, but he gave me an approving nod, as if to say, "Good for you, man." Amrila swept the last game, with Ibsith barely getting one score in, but I suspected the elven woman had let her friend win after seeing how much it meant to the Zincari woman. After that, I suggested we find the skee-ball games. That way we were mostly playing against ourselves. We approached the towering skee-ball lanes, and I could feel an excited, nostalgic tension in my stomach. It had been so long since I'd played. And in high school, this was one of Jay and my favorite pastimes. We each stepped up to a lane and slid our cards into the little slots, and the hard brown balls were released into the channels next to the lanes. The women watched me throw the first couple of balls to see how to play, but then they picked up one of the balls and began to throw them underhanded up the lane toward the different holes. "The ones closest to you are worth the least number of points," I explained, "and then the two little holes up in the corners are each worth 100 points. I took a deep breath and tried the move that used to drive Jay nuts, because I would always score 100 points with it. The ball flew up the lane, bounced once, and then dived into the small hole in the upper right-hand corner, and I couldn't help but cheer. I still had the touch. The skee ball machine chimed, and a long line of tickets poured out of the slot next to the card readers. I grinned as I pulled them away and showed them to the girls.
"What are those?"
Amrila asked with a raised eyebrow. "Tickets," I replied. "You can use them to pay for one of those prizes." I pointed to the back wall, behind a counter manned by a very bored teenager, where there were prizes of varying levels of cheapness on display. Ibsith's eyes went wide as she looked over the prizes and saw a large purple-collared stuffed gorilla hanging from the ceiling.
"Is that a fluffy troll?"
the blue-skinned woman gasped.
"It is much cuter than any troll I've ever seen. First one to get the princess the ugly troll thing wins,"
Amrila declared suddenly as she turned to me with a fierce smile. "Oh," I returned the grin. "You're on."
"Yay!"
Ibsith cheered gleefully as she stepped back and watched us make fools of ourselves for her entertainment. It was a tight, fierce competition. I tried to use my trick throw to my advantage, but it had been a long time since I'd played skee-ball, and I was rusty. The Zincari was also a quick study, so she watched me closely as I threw the balls and then copied what I was doing. Within 20 minutes, there was a mountain of tickets between us, and Ibsith was cheering us both on as we threw ball after ball. Finally, when all the money on both of our cards had been spent, we each picked up our pile of tickets and took them over to the prize counter to see who'd won.
"Jesus," the kid behind the counter said as we both dropped our piles on either end of the counter. "You guys really went for it."
The young man had a curly mop of dark brown hair that hung in his eyes and a name tag on his burgundy work polo that read Armando.
"I will take the ugly purple thing,"
Amrila pointed at the gorilla hanging from the ceiling.
"Well, let's see how many tickets you've got here,"
Armando said as he began to feed the tickets into a machine that counted them.
"You have 4,935 tickets. Unfortunately, the purple gorilla is 5,500 tickets."
"What?"
the Zincari woman protested with a scowl. "How many tickets do I have?" I swooped in before Amrila genuinely lost her temper at the kid. Armando began feeding tickets into the machine again, and I smiled smugly at the red-skinned woman since I was sure I'd gotten more tickets than she had.
"You have 5,012 tickets, sir."
"What?" I said as I looked up from my gloating.
"Shit."
"So, we
We don't have enough for the troll.
Ibsith sighed as her heart-shaped face fell slightly. No, we have enough, I said as I put my arm around my beautiful wife and looked at Amrila. We'll just have to put our tickets together, even though I had more and technically won. I winked slyly at the horned woman, who narrowed her eyes at me playfully.
Of course we'll get you the gorilla,
the red-skinned woman agreed.
Even if I could have beaten Eddie with another throw or two?
I laughed out loud, and the ladies joined in as the kid got out a stepladder to get down the huge stuffed gorilla. I told young Armando to just give the rest of the tickets to the next kid who came along, and Ibsith happily wrapped her arms around the purple ape she insisted on calling a troll. Then the three of us got some food at a small, overpriced concession stand in the arcade, and I finally got my beer. After we ate and played a few more games, we all went back home, with Ibsith's purple monstrosity in the bed of the truck. As the girls chatted and recounted their favorite games and moments from the night, I couldn't help but think how much fun we'd had. I wanted every night to be like this, full of fun, food, and good company. I wanted to do everything in my power to make Ibsith and Amrila happy, so I started to give serious thought to making an offer on the Miller's place, and I made up my mind to call Myers in the morning.